President Trump has signed a flurry of executive actions over the past 5 days, including earlier today, advancing the Dakota and Keystone pipelines. So, you know, just in case you weren't sure, we're not in Kansas anymore. And the way things are going, if they find some more oil in Kansas, Kansas won't be in Kansas anymore. The Trump Report starts now!
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin!
Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
That's the quietest public enemy song I've ever heard. I don't hear it in my ears, but if the people at home hear it, that's all that's going to matter. Yeah, oh, there we go. As the great Chuck D said, don't believe the hype, although, personally, sometimes the hype is all you're going to be able to believe because maybe you can't believe what the man is telling you. The white man in the White House. So we'll talk about all of that. But welcome to the Trump Report. I am the moderator, Christian Black, at Christian DMZ. To my left, camera right, for those watching on YouTube, Scott Moore at S-Man 80.
Hey, guys.
On the couch of, I don't know what it is.
Alternative facts.
Couch of, yes.
I think we decided.
Couch of alternative facts. Joining us, the one and only, Mr. Drexel Hurd.
Hello.
Now, in season 4, episode 2 of Sherlock. Oh, no, I'm sorry. You're actually doing a marathon of all three episodes of Sherlock from this season. You're doing that here tonight.
Tonight.
So
impressive.
I was able to steal you away from that because you had a gap in
schedule.
I saw you
in the chat room, so thanks for talking about Margaret Thatcher with us.
And, look, I felt like I could bring the politics to that, and you can bring some Sherlock-like deduction here.
Nice cross-promotion here. Yeah.
If Sherlock could figure out what's going on
maybe
in this country, maybe we all can. Yeah,
we're doing all three episodes tonight. We just finished episode 1, The Six Thatchers. We're going to the Lion Detective. Like, I'll sneak out of here at some point just to go into the next studio and then we'll do the last episode at 10 o'clock tonight.
Right, and it's a British show, so three episodes is like exhausting.
That's
for
it.
Yeah. But, you know, in any case, what's of course really exhausting is the Trump Report, which we're doing, but make sure you follow us on Twitter at Trump Report ABTV, as in AfterBuzz TV. Follow us there, like us on YouTube, comment, rate us on iTunes, all that good stuff. So yes, as I was saying, sometimes you have to believe the hype because it's we're getting the alternative facts. We are definitely living in a post-factual error. Error was a was a Freudian slip, but it's also an error. So Alexis, when you can, I'd like you to get the photos that I sent you. Now, when we were on the air, we saw these photos of the mall in Washington, D.C. On Inauguration Day, comparing 2017 to 2009. And the one that we saw, we're just like, well, that has to be from earlier because there's just too much empty space. And as it turned out, it wasn't from right at inauguration time, but it was from a little bit earlier, but it didn't actually fill in that much more. But we just figured there was no chance that that was the one. So if you take a look, for those watching on YouTube right now, what the image is that you see on the left is 2009, the first inauguration for President Obama, and that was at 11 a.m., so an hour before he started speaking. Skewing this image in Trump's favor is that the image on the right is at noon, right when he starts speaking. So there's another hour for people to fill in for Obama's. And as you can clearly see, there are less people on the right. And I did see sort of a funny, but, you know, not so funny because it's terrifying what goes on these days, that what they did is they zoomed in on the big white tarps that are there. And they showed it was just people in their Klan robes that were making up a big part of the crowd. Now, again, it's just comedy. We're not actually saying that there were people in their Klan robes there. It's just a little comedy that was out there.
But it could be with alternative facts.
Right,
with alternative facts. Yeah, exactly. So, for some reason, Sean Spicer, White House Press Secretary, needed, and look, you want to talk about a guy who's just following orders. He's got a job. And his job is
and the
to
worst
say,
job ever.
It's a pretty terrible job.
Kellyanne
Conway's job, not as bad as his. His job is he has to go out there and like, no, take a look at it, you know? Who are you going to believe? Me or your lion eyes? Because look right there. Clearly, that crowd on the right is bigger. And Sean Spicer, look, good for him. He's got to get his check. And he just... they doubled down and they said not only was that the biggest, it not only was it bigger, but it was the biggest. And they
ever
then started throwing in, you know, watching on air as well.
Tens of millions. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, is Drexel's mic on? I don't know if I'm hearing him correctly. I know that, but anyway. So, in any case, that they really doubled down. And Scott, give us your thoughts on the fact that Sean Spicer just basically put all the chips in the middle of the table and said, yeah, I'm going to let it ride on double zero on roulette wheel. Go ahead. Let's see.
I mean, I watched it and I just finished, and we'll get into the women's march
yes,
later.
We'll definitely talk
but
about
I'd come
that,
back
yeah.
down. I was very excited. I was feeling great. And then I come back and watch this. I'm like, what kind of alternate reality are we at right now? And I felt embarrassed for him. And I wrote on Twitter, because now I've been just aggressively writing every single person and calling them out when they're ridiculous. And I said, I actually felt bad for him because I'm sure the president said, go out here. I want you to say this because he feels so threatened and uncomfortable by the fact that his numbers were less. And it was just horrible. And then the fact that – I don't know if you'd heard the press conference, the first one that he had yesterday. And he still insisted – that it was the biggest.
Right.
And he wasn't going to even back down on that even yesterday during the press conference.
They're not
going to
back down on it.
And he said, oh, well, if you count, you know, all the digital stuff and everything else, it's way more than Reagan's was in 81. And I'm just flabbergasted the fact that they're blatantly spreading fake information. And I don't know what they're hoping to get out of this.
I mean, the motivation from my viewpoint is basically that you're going to just toe that line that, you know, I don't get fair coverage, and you just basically do it so much, and you're just like, look, you got to get in line. This is what we're saying. You should report what we're saying. Or, you know what, maybe you don't get that nice seat in the press room, or maybe you don't get a seat in the press room at all anymore.
And that's scary. And
that
also the fact that it was so petty and something so ridiculous makes me concerned. What are they going to now?
You do this for something that can't be proven.
Right.
You know, that you're just something that's more subjective than photographs that go, look, it's less people. And you know what? In Washington, D.C., what was it? Like 92% of people that lived in Washington, D.C. voted for President Obama. So it was really easy to get to the mall.
Right, exactly.
And President Clinton.
Right, exactly.
It's very, you know, I'm in Hillary.
It was very.
Well,
that's funny.
Yes, that's funny.
So, but, you know, and look, they didn't for Trump, so, you know, people had to travel in. And, you know, so it's just. I don't know. Look, I would say there's no shame in having a smaller crowd than for the first black president. But of course, everything needs to be the biggest. It needs to be the best. It needs to be the hugest.
But
it needs to be the bigliest. Yes, Drexel.
I mentioned earlier before the show, I listen to the West Wing Weekly podcast every day.
Yeah.
And one of the things, they had Jay Carney on in one of the episodes at the beginning of season two, going into season two of the West Wing. And one of the things that he said that he learned from the other past press secretaries, from Ari Fleischer to Dana Perino to Dee Dee Myers, Robert Gibbs, every press secretary that came before him said the same thing first out of the gate. Like, the first rule of being the press secretary is do not lie to the press.
Mm-hmm.
That is number one rule of press secretary.
It's like the golden rule.
Yeah, there's the golden
rule. It really
rule.
Is.
I mean, you can, of course, be evasive. Right. And there, you know, there's the half-truths of, you know, we're going to have to look into that. There's things you can't say. But, yeah,
we're not going to comment
lies.
And from what I understand, the relationship – Sean Spicer is not as close to Donald Trump as the rest of his aides are, Josh Kushner or Jared Kushner or Kellyanne Conway or Steve Bannon or whatever, to the point where I don't know if – Donald Trump really trusts Sean Spicer all that much just yet, so he just kind of throws him out there whenever and expects him to kind of regurgitate things like he sent Katrina Pearson out often, and she kind of spouted out a lot of alternative facts as well. But we saw a different Sean Spicer on Saturday than we did on Monday, which he was still spewing.
He was
lies.
And there was that little reboot there.
Right.
That's
He's still spewing lies. However. There was a moment where he said, you know, it was more a frustration. And a frustrated White House is a dangerous White
House. It is, exactly.
And I think I used to want to be the White House press secretary when I was in college.
So did I. Actually,
and,
it's funny you said that. So did I. I thought it would be great because I
love C.J. Craig so much, and I thought it would be a great role,
and
he doesn't
want
to.
That's what made me never want that job.
Well, everyone wants to be
White
House press secretary.
She's a great character.
Yes.
I'm like, yeah, I don't want that
reminds
job.
Me of that, it reminds me of that episode when Josh Lyman was trying to be the press secretary for a day, and then he screwed the whole thing up.
Yeah.
And Toby.
That's what it was like in my head. Yeah, it was more of a Toby.
It's more of a Toby. And so I think that Sean Spicer, he might not last very long if Trump gets really upset. But I think that, you know, we keep blaming the White House right now, when at the end of the day, just like what happened in the election, the media should have, like, you know, somebody suggested the media, the network should start putting their, like, their field correspondents, their, mm-hmm. like, combat correspondents in the White House press room, in the press corps, because they're used to hostile environments, and this current White House is a hostile environment to journalists.
Well, certainly to media, and... go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, just the two points are, you know, what I was saying earlier is, like, if they're going to lie about something like this, what are they? Sure. How am I supposed to trust what they're saying going forward when there's actually serious implications going on? And the second thing I was going to say about you mentioning about that is I felt like I listened to the second press conference, or the first one, really, on Monday, and I just kind of was baffled by the fact that the media was just sending all these very softball-like questions to him. And I kind of agree with you, Drexel, if the media is to say we're not going to cover your stuff anymore. Of course, Trump loves publicity and everything else, wants to be loved and adored by everybody. And if they were to really ask hard questions and really be on their A game and then not even show up, like I heard CNN wasn't even going to show up anymore to his press briefings. I don't know how long that'll last.
They're not going
to
answer your questions.
And they're not going to be there, exactly. Yeah. Then don't show up and give them the attention.
If they're not going to answer your questions, there's no real benefit to being there.
No.
So you know what? Go ahead and, you know.
But I think more people or more of the media need to do that and really, really need to be focusing on their A game and really get back to the investigative roots of journalism and not just focus on the sensational stuff like the MLK bust and other things like that that are now going to play back into Trump's anti-media rhetoric. We need to have people that are going to be serious.
And it kind of reminds us of the conversation that we had during Inauguration Day, which was the media and so many of our friends were so focused on what the website said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, you're like, everybody, the website is the website.
Yeah.
Nobody cares about the website. Yes, be glad that they didn't take down the fact that you could sign petitions, and that will come down eventually, I'm sure, once they start to realize what it actually was
all,
about.
And all the people that they actually have the crazy respond, petitions,
That they actually have to respond to something. Mm-hmm. So, you know, everybody is so focused on the wrong thing that they're going to allow this to happen. Yes, the networks need to put – the White House Correspondents Association now needs to put investigative journalists in this press corps. Or – the media just does not need to show up at the press briefings. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that happened on Monday was that Sean Spicer started, and from what I understand, this never happens. Like a president will do it, kind of have a list of names who to call on.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed that, from what I understand, Sean Spicer had a list, and he called on those publications that fit the narrative that they wanted to drive out, starting with like the Christian Science Monitor, like something like so obscure that you're like, don't go to the first, like, the first chair is the one that you typically go to. The Helen Thomas chair is the one that you ask the question, the first question.
Yeah, Skip from Grit Magazine, go ahead. What's your question?
Yeah. Right.
No, look, I mean, clearly we could talk about this one issue for the whole show, and something tells me it'll come up again. And Alexis, if you could put the chat room up on the monitor, it'd be good to see. I especially would like to know what our friend Storage Yard Resident, who I know is in the chat room, what he thinks. You know, we're very, you know, look, on some level, I think that a lot of people who watch the show should be happy for Storage Yard Resident because he's gotten exactly what he wanted, and let's see how it all works out for him. But I would like to know his thoughts as he sees these things. Does he think it's a doctored photo? Does he, or is it just like, oh yeah,
but you can't really, like, you can doctor a photo, but you can't really doctor a video. And I even saw somebody's personal video from the back of the mall.
Yeah.
On what we were seeing at the time that Donald Trump was speaking.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, giving his inaugural address. So, like, there's too many things
don't lie. And then the transit authority being able to track how many people went on the subway and everything else.
And Sean Spicer getting up there and saying, nobody has hard numbers. So if nobody has numbers, then
he gave numbers after that. That was the thing that was so ridiculous, and then he gave numbers after that.
I mean, we've spent too much time on it, but the White House has spent way too much time on it, as evidenced by the fact that President Trump was speaking at the CIA, and, you know, yes, he had a prearranged visit there, and turned out his nominee wasn't confirmed, so he went anyway. But this is probably not what he needed to talk about. And by probably, I mean definitely. But no. He can't help himself.
He can't. At the CIA.
That's probably what the parenthetical subheading of this show should be. The Trump Report, parentheses, he can't help himself. He just can't help himself. He has to be the best. He has to always be right. And
somebody always has to be clapping for him.
Right. Yes. Well, that's the interesting thing is he brings – talk about don't believe the hype. He brings his own hype squad.
Right.
You know?
Instead of traveling press corps. Instead of – what do they call that? The press pool.
He's got a
traveling clap pool.
Well, you know, there's morning radio shows that do that. They have people that sit there just to clap and laugh. And, you know, look, Trump, if nothing else, understands how to utilize the media. And I was watching that and I was like, oh, there's people in that room laughing. I didn't think of it. I mean, because you're not going to assume he – brings human
to a CIA headquarters, you're not going to think that.
Yeah. And if you saw, like, you know, we talked about just getting back to the actual the real issues, which is, you know, every executive order that he signed has been a humongous photo opportunity in, like, I don't remember seeing this many photo ops when President Obama was doing executive
orders. Not executive orders.
He just kind of signed it and kind of talked about it.
Because they're usually executive orders. They're not a big deal. Now, I get it. It's the first few days. And they're like, let's make this into a big thing and undoing
campaign promises. Yes. But it's like lined up.
With all the people behind them.
Today's Dakota Access Pipeline executive order, though, and Keystone Pipeline and everything else that happened today was the first time we saw Kellyanne Conway behind the desk.
Yes.
The first time they put a woman in the shot.
Yes, because they were started like, getting heat that there's all these white older men behind. And
Kellyanne
Conway
had to slither into the Oval Office.
Exactly.
Well, so here's the interesting thing is
there's a lot of them because I was going to say the media. I was going to say really quick the media. Sure. The thing, his anti-media thing again, because then he had to bring it up at the CIA that the media was lying about their feud. And yet he was the one that started on Twitter. And again, you can go back and see that. So I don't understand what this whole pathological lying
thing that he's trying to get out of. Because the media is allowing him to do that. The New York Times is the only publication that put the word lies.
Which was beautiful on that front page and said lied, which was great.
And I was
And I want more of that from more of the media outlets, not just New York Times. And I did thank the New York Times on Twitter, but I want more of that.
Quantico After Show last night, and I brought it up on the show that, you know, they're moving into the second half of this season, and the networks are starting to move into a post-Trump America. I was reading that the networks are starting to cater their shows to bring in viewers from Trump's America so they can capture those viewers, and I think that's a mistake.
I think you're absolutely right, and I'm sure anybody here at AfterBuzz knows Yael Teagle, and she does the Law & Order SVU show, and they had a Trump episode that they have pushed several times now and may never air because I think that it was written and produced assuming that he was going to lose, and now they're like, well, this is just not going to be worth the headache. So I don't know. It's interesting. Storage Yard Resident, oh, no. I don't like any comment that starts on InfoWars. Storage Yard Resident on InfoWars.com, but I will read your comment because I like you. It went away. There it is. On InfoWars.com, we're saying the photo was at an earlier time before Trump showed up. And yes, the photo that we saw first was that one. Now, the one that I showed was at noon, and there are more people for sure, but there are less people than in the Obama picture, which is the point. It's not the point of how many, what the difference is. It's the point that the White House is like, well, Kellyanne presented alternative facts to the facts that people saw with their eyes.
So, and the Nielsen ratings of who watched on TV was lower. I mean, all the stuff is true and able to be counted. It's ridiculous of why he's continuing to lie about that. And then, as we can get into today, about lying about the illegal voters again. Like, it's just ridiculous.
But Storage Yard Resident, if you get all of your news from only two sources, InfoWars and the Trump Report. No, InfoWars and the Trump Report, I like to feel like you're going to get a little bit more. So thank you for sticking with us. Let's very briefly, even though it was massive and hugely important, let's talk about the marches across the country. You know, people were referring to them as women's marches, but I know there were a lot of men there. And the big one was in D.C., but they were across the country. My wife went with a bunch of friends here in Los Angeles. I know a lot of people who went. And I think it was great to see why people were out. And we were having this conversation on The Tomorrow Show last night, which is basically that, you know, obviously if Hillary won, people wouldn't be so motivated to be involved. And no one's going to say, I'm glad that Trump won because it's made me more involved. However, that's what happened, and as a result, you're sort of getting this thing where people are like, oh, okay, maybe we don't just all sit back and think that, all right, everything's going to go our way, because it has for the last 8 years.
Mm-hmm. But I feel like, and I thought the march was great. A lot of my friends went, a lot of everybody. I was working that day, so I couldn't get out there. But I think there's two things that happen to liberals and Democrats, which is we get hyped up, and then 3-6 months from now, it kind of falls to the wayside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I know Gloria Steinem was on Real Time Friday night, and Bill Maher brought that up. Like, what happened? What's post-March?
Right, right. Yeah.
And, you know, everybody's getting involved. Yes. I know there's an organization that's primarily focused on recruiting female candidates now. I think it's like, I can't remember. I saw it the other day.
Well, Emily's List is always been a big list one.
But there's a new one that's like primarily focused on recruiting female candidates now. And, you know, that's going to be the question is, what happens a year from now when all 435 congressional seats are up for grabs, 33 Democratic senators are up for grabs, and
39
governorships. If those numbers, you know, and I posted on that day looking at the numbers just from the Women's March. If those numbers carry through 2018, yeah, Republicans are going to be in trouble. But if the momentum starts to slow down, because everybody starts to see this dangerous, what we've seen in the last 4 days is not going to slow down. So if people are starting to see the other side of that is that I also blame the Democrats, because that same day, every candidate for DNC chair, except for Pete Buttigieg, from Indiana, Mayor Pete, was at the march. He was at the march. They were at the David Brock dinner.
Oh, that's interesting. That night. I didn't even realize that.
Keith Ellison was there.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Perez was there. I've got Sally Boynton Brown and Ray Buckley on my show next week. They were there, I think. Actually, Sally wasn't there. Ray was there. So I think that is where you're starting to see. And then, you know, you have the news of Cory Booker voting against prescription drugs. So there's a lot of momentum that is going to start to slow Democrats
down. Right, and you're right, and it is a common problem that we have as Democrats and the progressive movement is, what do we do to harness that energy? Because it was great, everyone got out, and it was peaceful, and it was very successful, but you're right, how do we harness that energy? How do we keep these people motivated? Especially how do we get these people out to vote? How do we get them, you know, involved at the local level and get people in that?
And I said today to somebody, I said, right. Elizabeth Warren today signaled that she would vote in favor of getting Ben Carson out of committee. She might not vote for him on the floor, but she's going to give him the yes and get him out of committee, whatever. So that's a shock to the progressive wing. I'm sure Sherrod Brown today said that he would vote for Ben Carson as well. But on the other side, you have, I think that eventually Bernie Sanders is going to disappoint the Bernie Sanders wing of the party.
And by that, you mean disappoint Chelsea.
Yes.
Yes.
I just meant like he is going to vote for something that they're going to be like,
he seems very ready to, you know,
compromise.
Where there's common ground, he's going to compromise.
I mean, Democrats introduced that $1 trillion. They're about to introduce that $1 trillion infrastructure bill. Bernie Sanders isn't attached to that. However, you know, he's still tweeting about, the things that he's always tweeting about, which I think again is a mistake, because he's a one issue thinker.
Well, wrapping up the topic of the marches. There were a series of tweets from President Trump. I'm going to focus on the latter one, which is the positive one, where he said, "Peaceful protests are a hallmark of our democracy. Even if I don't always agree, I recognize the rights of people to express their views." It is, I believe, one of the most retweeted tweets from President Trump.
And it wasn't written by him. Of course. And I called him out on it.
No, of course. But
because you saw the earlier one.
The sense of, all right, I've got to let whoever that is that does that, it's not Bannon. You know,
no,
whoever
Stan,
that is.
Yeah,
whoever handles that approach, because we'll get those statements from him in person not that often in the last 5 days, but you'll get the tweets from like that. And that's what he should have been doing the last 5 days, is that approach. Like, well, oh, okay, people can protest. Great. That's all I'm going to say.
And what
because
can
now
I,
I've got to
yeah.
work. Yeah.
Right.
Now, let's talk about the work that he is doing. I know Drexel's going to have to leave soon. So I do want to talk about these executive actions. The first one is sort of easy to kind of talk about, a federal hiring freeze. It doesn't bother me that much.
There's, I feel like, lot, that happens every president.
Yeah, there's a lot of federal employees. That's fine.
It's window treatment. I mean, it's not a bid.
Yeah,
the size of the federal government has continuously gone down as far as the workforce. It's silly, though.
It'll
except,
even out.
Or as Donald Trump says, except for the military. As he signed, yeah. except for the military. Yeah. We're not gonna downsize the military.
Although I do know a lot of federal employees that are looking to get into another line of work. So the hiring freeze will probably have to end when there's some vacancies.
It's not like they were hiring anybody anyway. They still have a lot of vacancies.
It's just a silly political thing. It was very silly.
So. TPP, and Chelsea's not here to talk about it.
I know.
So we'll talk more about that. But there's the TPP and the Mexico City abortion rules, which I admit that I had to look up exactly what that meant. And that sort of ties into something that the House passed today, which I knew was in here. But that was basically not using federal funds. And, the gag rule and the Hyde Amendment. So let's talk about those before we talk about the pipelines. All the hiring freeze, if you want, but the Mexico City rules and the House legislation today.
Oh, well, the gag rule.
The gag rule.
The gag rule, yeah.
I mean, from what we know is that the gag rule is just kind of flip-flops back and forth between Democratic president and Republican. Right. Like, that's just something that's going to happen. I don't think that's going to change.
These couple days around here is when it always gets signed because it's the anniversary of Roe v. Wade,
right.
And President and Obama allegedly waited an extra day because he didn't want to sign it on the the actual anniversary. So yeah, so it goes back and forth. So obviously,
Forget the proclamation that he gave himself to, by the way.
The proclamation.
I couldn't find that though. That's what I was going to ask, if that was real, because I couldn't find it on the White House website.
Oh, they probably got crazy and they probably took it down.
Yeah, because I did not see it on the proclamation.
It was he deemed January 20th, 2017 the something day of something patriotism day of, I don't know.
Wow.
I call it the day of reckoning.
Yeah, for dear leader. To have a day.
Winter is coming day. I don't know. some day that he gave himself.
I believe if we follow James Cameron in Terminator 2, it was Judgment Day.
Judgment Day.
What it was. And the Rise of the Machines is actually next month. But anyway, yeah, so look, these are all things that we very well can expect him to say and do. These are the issues that he's, as a Republican candidate, and sometimes when you talk about President Trump, you might use the air quotes around Republican.
Mm-hmm. I don't think I've said those words.
Trump?
I don't think I've said that yet.
I have noticed, obviously, we talk mostly just on the show. I know I have not heard you say it yet, and you slipped and you almost said it. When we had you on the phone. But, at some point, it'll probably just come out. But, that is who he is.
Right.
And
I call him Donald John.
Don John. So let's talk about the pipelines, which were very divisive issues. And there was a lot of protests. And, President Obama gets to, have his hands washed. He's like, hey, I didn't do anything with these.
Right.
Again, not really that surprising. And I think to some extent people are surprised at how many of these things are happening right away. But that also shouldn't be that surprising because it's like, first 100 days, look at the first 10 days. I think that that's something that they'll probably, Sean Spicer will probably brag about at some point.
Right, like the most executive order signed by any president ever. And then, we can always say, it was reversed when Democrats did it, then Republicans couldn't stand it.
Right.
Now all of a sudden it's okay.
Bernie Sanders came out in support of the executive order right when it happened. Not surprising. Not that I'm a big fan of Trans-Pacific Partnership. However, the alternative, in my view, of what the Republicans would want in a trade agreement is not the same trade agreement that a progressive who is against the Trans-Pacific Partnership is going to want.
Yeah.
The trade agreement that Donald Trump is going to put forth will benefit more the corporations. I know that clause in the TPP that really benefited corporations in terms of how they were litigated against and everything like that. Like, if the new wave of the Trans-Pacific Partnership that the Trump administration will, cook up, will not benefit the workers like I think they will, and they will be sorely disappointed. So it's either you're going to have, at the end of the day, I think what progressives have to remember is there's going to be a trade agreement. There's always going to be – we are going to always be in a trade agreement. So this idea that the Trans-Pacific Partnership was so bad that they could not – that we couldn't even test it out to see how it goes, you're going to get something worse. It's like the election. You thought Hillary was bad. Look where we are, four days into a presidency that we, who knows what's going to happen in the next 100 days.
Kim K in the chat room, the real Kim K, not the other Kim K.
Hey, Kim K.
But I dare someone to ask Trump to explain what he's signing. We could bet you all the money I have that he has no clue about the documents Paul Ryan is having him sign.
It's not Paul Ryan.
Right.
It's Steve Bannon.
Right.
Because somebody said to me today, or I was reading somebody's post today that said, Donald Trump is not smart enough to cook up all of this stuff so quickly.
Right.
Oh, yeah, no, he's just signing what's given to him, essentially.
This has Steve Bannon and what's his name? Mike Pence written all over it.
And I think to some extent, sure, any president is going to sign a lot of stuff. But yeah, the carefully curated issues that are being, you know, signed into law or signed into executive action are definitely, you know, for the base, for the people who voted and gave President Trump those electoral votes. So tomorrow he's expected to sign some more, restricting immigration from Syria and six other Middle Eastern or African countries. These countries include Iraq, Iran, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, as I mentioned.
I'm actually surprised Iraq's on that list.
Iraq?
I'm surprised Iraq's on that list.
Because Trump probably has friends there?
Because he
probably went to a luau at Hussein's house at some point.
Oh my gosh.
What? I'm just asking.
These I'm surprised that, the amount of work that we've put into Iraq.
Yeah.
That Iraq would be on a list to ban to keep out.
We've put so much effort into it, they don't need to leave anymore. Oh my now gosh. It's worth staying there. But I don't know, it's interesting because look, this is one of the things that people are worried about. This isn't the wall, but
The wall, I think he's going to do that tomorrow as well.
Or you think the wall's going to be tomorrow?
Well, that's what they're saying.
It said restrictions on that.
Right, but they talked about the executive order to start the process of the wall or whatever they have
not,
to
do. But it's not a...
It's not going to...
These are executive actions that have an effect on the federal government, how his administration works, what happens, you know, along the border, along these border states. States now have to be involved in this process. The Congress has to be involved in this process. It doesn't just happen.
No.
And, you know, we're going to talk about the pipelines.
Yes.
We're going to talk about the pipelines. I said to somebody today, the Trump administration is going to have to decide between the two one of the pipelines to happen first. It's either going to be Keystone, which came first, or it's going to be Dakota Access, so if people want to, somebody said, what can we do? And I said, you have to vote in 2018. Like you have to somehow flip 40 seats.
Yeah.
Next in 2018.
Which 40, it can be seats. Done. I mean, it happened in 2006, and it happened again in 2008.
I mean, Daryl Issa here in California is up for re-election again.
And he barely won out here.
Right. So there are opportunities for Dakota Access Pipeline to be stopped. Keystone, maybe not so much.
Mm-hmm.
But because the Trump administration is going to have to choose between the two, one of the two.
Yeah.
Yeah, look, I mean, obviously we've seen the last few midterms have been interesting to say the least, and depending on how the next couple years go, it could very well be like 1994, the contract with America, Newt Gingrich with the gavel and all that, you know, just sort of the opposite ideological approach to it.
And Trump doesn't want to go up against Nancy Pelosi.
Right. Which is interesting, by the way, on Inauguration Day, them sort of laughing and joking around about the pens and like, oh, I don't want the pen for Tom Price. And, Mr. President, giggling. And I'm just like, Nancy Pelosi, I think she's smitten by Trump.
Right. And it goes back to what you said earlier about him lying about the voter fraud. That comment happened in the meeting with Democratic leaders at the table.
Yeah, it's just
and
like
not a
ridiculous.
Single Democratic leader, Chuck Schumer.
Nobody
Steny
called
Hoyer was
him
in
out.
That room. Nobody came out of that meeting being like, this man just said this.
Blatant and ridiculous lie because he can't even handle the fact
and
that
I'm,
he lost.
And I'm, and
the
I'm wondering,
vote.
And this goes to everybody in the chat room, whatever. I'm wondering if, like, we haven't really heard anything from Paul Ryan. We haven't really heard anything from Democrat. Like, everybody seems to be very eerily calm. Either they're just all crazy, or they know something is happening that we don't know yet, and they're just kind of biding the time.
They're just going
to
stay the course.
And allowing him to do whatever he thinks he's doing.
Let him just say whatever stupid things he's going to say.
And then pull the rug out from under him later, because today we found out, like I said, about Elizabeth Warren voting for her. But like, these are things that they would have never, ever, ever, ever been voting on, voted yes on, ever. Put their name on, never, ever. And now here we are being like, Elizabeth Warren is doing what? And I know that she's up for re-election next year, but, you know.
Yeah, but this is the kind of stuff that
gets people primaried.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Drexel, I know you're going to have to leave in a moment, so I'll jump to this topic that I saw. Today, the latest Rasmussen Reports daily presidential tracking poll shows that 57% of likely U.S. voters, which I think is a weird way to characterize them because they're not voting anytime soon, but I guess that shows that they're politically minded and they pay attention. 57% approve of President Trump's job performance. Of those, 42% strongly approve. Are you surprised at those numbers, or is it just the people who are getting energized by the, as we're referring to it in this room, the Steve Bannon agenda getting pushed out there?
I was actually going to say it's the polling company, because Rasmussen is known to tilt heavily Republican and has forever, because I've followed them as well, because I like to just get
back in the past.
They definitely tilt heavily Republican, because that's not the actual numbers when you aggregate everything of the type of numbers that we have for his approval ratings right now.
Right. And if you think about it, was it Rasmussen? Sounds like Rasputin. and you really can't. You really couldn't trust Rasputin. And so there's a little bit of...
But they do really tilt Republican. So I'm not going to take much into that, because if you look at all the other aggregate polls, you see these closer to around 40% to maybe some of them have them up as high as about 45%.
Well, you're always my go-to poll
guy.
Yeah. So
I wouldn't read too much into their poll. Right.
It's always good, but that's why on Trump versus Hillary, mm-hmm. we always looked at the Real Clear Politics average, because...
What right now?
That I don't know.
Well,
I haven't looked at the lousy internet connection.
It was around 40%, which he did have the lowest like approval rating of incoming president that anyone in the past 70 years. He had the lowest. So.
That's something that he should, you know, he's always wants to have. I had the best low numbers of anybody ever. We had the hugest low numbers. It was terrific.
I did want to bring up something, because we talked about all the dangerous executive orders that happened.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
But Julian Assange kind of reneged on his promise to be extradited to the U.S.
I thought that was interesting.
However, he also said today that he wants to negotiate that with the Trump administration's Department of Justice. He wants to renegotiate that extradition with the DOJ, with what will be Jeff Sessions' Department of Justice. Because I think that he has those tax returns. Oh. And I will be very, very interested to see what kind of deal Julian Assange gets out of this Donald Trump White House.
Kellyanne Conway says that Americans aren't interested in his tax returns. They're only interested in their tax returns.
I'd be interested to know if Trump voters really were interested in Julian Assange getting some sort of extradition deal.
Yeah, I don't think that's a big ticket item for them. You know,
no.
I don't think so.
That's what I'm saying. I'm wondering if they would be like, "Well, he's a traitor." Would that automatically be their go-to? Like, why would this guy, who's all about America first and patriotism, go after? Because in the past, we've always gone after. Like, look how they treated Bo Bergdahl. Look how they treated Chelsea mm-hmm. Manning. Look how they treated Edward Snowden. And now you've got the biggest threat to American cybersecurity mm-hmm. out there. And now you want to give him a deal from the Department of Justice.
Well, on that note, Scott and I will have a few more minutes, yep. but Drexel, I know you need to get on to talk about
Sherlock.
I
don't think they're going to care, to be honest. If it's something that Trump deals, they're going to over...
They're going
to
be like,
turn a blind eye to that.
Yeah, and then Julian Assange is going to end up being the head of the NSA.
So I can jump over to the Sherlock after show for episode 2 of season 4, which was what I thought the best one.
It was very good, Toby Jones.
So that one was great. So you can check that out. And Political Culture will be back next Tuesday.
Yes, sir.
At 6 Pacific
with two DNC candidates, and Chelsea will be on next week's show.
Yeah, that's exciting.
As well as John Manganiello, who does the Big Brother After Show, as well as the American
Crime. Well, and Chelsea better do our show, too. You know, if I get an email, I'm sorry, I'm too busy with Drexel's show.
And I'm headed to Doubt. Doubt on new Captain Heigl show on CBS. So you can check that after show. That comes out in February 15th. And probably The Good Fight, the spinoff of The Good Wife. So you can
Right, well. The CBS All Access, spinoff. Yeah.
Well,
Drexel, we always appreciate you stopping
by. Guys.
At Drexel Herd on Twitter. Thank you, Drexel.
Thank you, guys.
So now, Scott, there. Did you feel like you got to finish making your point there, or did I jump in with Drexel's plug and cut you off at all? Because I didn't. Before we move on, I wanted to.
From which part earlier? From.
Well, I think that tells me that we're.
I think so. Yeah.
Along. So what we're seeing a little bit of is some of the silencing of government agencies. There have been multiple federal agencies that are limiting employees' ability to issue news releases, tweet, or otherwise communicate with the outside world. We've seen this to varying degrees. The EPA, Department of the Interior, Transportation, Agriculture, Health and Human Services. And the White House comment line was shut down for a while. It'll apparently be back at some point, but last I checked, it actually was not back yet.
Yeah.
So basically, they don't want to hear from you, and they don't want you to hear from them. Is that the message that we can take away from the Trump administration?
Yes, right now, but you know, it's maybe a surprising thing that I'll say here. I want to wait and see what happens over the next few days because you know, there's this. The problem is, and we kind of have it on both sides with the media, is
right.
we've gotten so fixated on the sensationalism and the get it out first kind of thing that people sometimes don't vet things as carefully. And I want to see what really did happen. If he did say, you know, the EPA cannot message out climate change things, and then that's an issue. If it was just let's regroup and let,
right.
you know, Scott Pruitt get into EPA and whatever, and let's not, then I'm like, I can give a little more slack. It just depends on what their motivation was,
no,
on the
I
why
think that-
they're telling them not to field reporters' questions and to be able to tweet the way they feel they want to and communicate to the public the way they want to. Because that is incredibly American. They should be able to have access to these government organizations, and it should be transparent, and it should be able to talk about what they feel they want to talk about without being restricted by an administration.
So we'll
on
check,
either side.
We'll check in on that in a couple of weeks and we'll see. Because I agree that, you know, look, that's a very calm, rational approach. It's like, let's just see what they do. You know, there is a turnover, decent sized turnover.
What is their motivation behind it? And I've seen, you know, some of the stuff about how the Badlands Twitter was going rogue and everything, but then that wasn't on there. And I know someone did a parody account on there. And there's just a lot of stuff going on right now. So it's almost like, let's cut through the noise and see what's really happening. And if it is happening where they're restricting them, then that's a huge issue. And we need to definitely get to the bottom of that.
Right. If it's just a simple matter that they don't want Obama administration holdovers, you know, basically putting out things that contradict the policies that they're about to enact, then I guess it does make sense. But we will keep an eye on it.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of them taking things off on climate change and other things, but we'll see what happens.
So the final thing that we're going to talk about before we go is SNL writer Katie Rich. She made a comment about Barron Trump saying that he will, quote, be the country's first homeschool shooter. So, first of all, not particularly funny. Second of all, as the White House press secretary's office said, it is a longstanding tradition that the children of presidents are afforded the opportunity to grow up outside of the political spotlight. The White House fully expects this tradition to continue. We appreciate your cooperation in this matter. I agree 100%. He's a 10-year-old kid, and, you know, I think that there's a fine line, because if you had said, oh, there were comments that he looked bored on inauguration day. That's one thing. But then you sort of start making him the butt of jokes and things like that. I didn't like when they did it to Chelsea Clinton. There's a very infamous incident that, believe it or not, Rush Limbaugh had a TV show at one point. And it was very clear, he likes to downplay it. Supporters of Rush will say, oh, they got the wrong picture up there. But they said that there's also a White House dog, and they showed a picture of Chelsea, who was like 12 at the time.
Yeah.
And look, there was a lot of reporting on the Bush twins, and of course, Sasha, and they're not twins, are they? Jenna and Barbara. I just called them twins.
No, they are.
They are twins.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
See, that sounded wrong, but okay.
But they're not identical. That's why they look
they
a little
are
bit different.
Definitely not identical. But, and then of course, Sasha and Malia. So yeah, I completely agree. It's like, you got to leave the kid alone.
If there's one bipartisan thing that we can all agree on, it's leave the kids alone. It's because he's a minor, and he had nothing to do with this or his dad or anything else. I think, you know, it's one thing with the adult children because they're actively saying things and doing things.
Present day Chelsea Clinton goes out there and spoke on her mom's behalf.
And that's fair game if they're adults and they're, you know, speak on the behalf like Eric and Ivanka and Don Jr. They're all fair game, but leave a minor who's growing up who's not involved. Yeah. He should be kept out of it. You know, and it's kind of the same thing. There's a certain degree, too, with Melania. I thought people were very harsh towards her, and people have obviously been way too harsh to former First Lady Michelle Obama. You know, there is a sense that, yes, they're adults and they're part of it, but they also didn't necessarily sign up for this job, and that you know, and we can tell that Melania obviously is not comfortable with English, doesn't really want to be out there, so it's very uncomfortable for her, and it's really not, she didn't sign up for it. So her and Barron should be able to be left alone for the most part. Let them do their thing and trash Donald Trump or praise him or whatever all you want, because he's there and he signed up for it.
He's the president.
That's your First Amendment right.
Yeah,
but don't you know, try to keep the kids alone. Yeah, I think it's something we can totally agree on. And it was really in poor taste for her to say that too.
Yeah, I definitely agree.
It wasn't funny.
It was in bad taste.
It was not smart.
My friend Tom Kelly, he wrote something for Huffington Post that, you know what, she apologized. She can be forgiven. It's okay. Like, whether SNL decides to fire her or not, because as comedians, you know, a lot of times you got to kind of figure out where the line is.
Right.
And as Tom pointed out, you don't know where the line is
sometimes, until you cross it.
And then you got to go back from it.
Right. And I think
if she had said that in a comedy club, people would have been like, and then that would have been it. But she tweeted it.
Mm-hmm.
And then everybody got to see it and got around. So, look, I don't know how funny she is. I just know that one thing from her. That's probably not she's been a writer for SNL for 3 years.
Right.
She's probably much funnier than that. So I hope that she, you know, this doesn't end her career, but at least,
well,
some kind of punishment is fine. I have no problem with
it. I was going to say, I don't think it's going to end her career in the sense that now someone will want to hire her because now she's out there. That's true. But on the flip side, yeah, I do agree that, you know, if she is apologetic and she went too far, you know, there's ways to recover from that. I mean, obviously, Donald Trump had made some comments in the past, as we all saw that.
Yeah.
And people overlook that. So I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but I think there's a good opportunity for her to maybe be forgiven and to be able to move on and learn that that was not appropriate and never do that again. And I think she has.
But something that will happen again is this show next Tuesday night, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 Eastern, Tuesday. That'll be the 31st of January.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that Chelsea will be back with us, but we also hope all of you will join us next Tuesday.
Yes.
We appreciate you being in the chat, those of you who are watching now. Obviously, everybody who checks us out after the fact, make sure you follow us on Twitter, at Trump Report ABTV. Seriously, it doesn't take that long. You'll get the link to the show. We'll keep it easy for you. Follow us there. Like us on YouTube. Comment. Rate us on iTunes. For the now departed, but still with us, you know, in spirit, Drexel Hurd, at Drexel Hurd. You can go see his Sherlock After show now that we're done.
I know. It's not like he was dead.
I know. That's why I said departed, but he just
in
left.
Spirit.
He's on another show now. Scott Moore, at SMan80. I'm Christian Blatt, at Christian DMZ. We will see you next Tuesday night on The Trump Report. Thanks, everybody.
Executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff. We would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later!
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.